Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back to Millennial Money. We got ourselves a cup of bankroll coffee here, so we're going to be real busy talking about crypto and other things. I don't know why I sound like the guy from Family Guy.
Kevin, how do you like your leak coffee from bankrollcoffee.com?
I love it. It's strong, and that's what I need. That's how I get so much done.
Nice. How's your campaign, by the way? We haven't talked
about
it.
It's fun, man. Yeah, it's fun. It's like I've gotten a whole lot better at doing interviews because I think I'm at like 200 or something now. So now, like I go on Fox National tomorrow morning. Tentatively, I got a big thing with Fox next week, which is insane. Like it's so cool. And it's always Fox for some reason. Like CNBC, MSNBC, like they don't care about me, which is weird because whatever. But yeah, man. Like I think I've just chilled out a little bit in terms of how stressed I used to get in front of the interviews. Because originally it was always like, oh, well, we're going to do this. And it felt very rigid. And now it's more like, this is how I feel. It's great. I like
That's
it.
Good.
Yeah. Have you noticed a correlation to subscribers or anything? Like, has your YouTube channel been growing, appearing on all these news channels?
No. No.
Oh, what?
Absolutely not. No. If anything, it's growing slower because politics is polarizing. So now you'll get all the comments on people who are like, oh, you have a vaccine card, unsubscribe. It's like, look, I'm not even gonna go down this rabbit hole. But you know what I mean? It's just you say one thing and you're gonna piss off someone. You can't win. But honestly, that's also the way politics has gone these days in America. It's like the strategy to win in politics is literally to piss off 49% of people as hard as you can. To make your 51% loyalist do everything for you.
Right. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it. Do you know how much
that's why you don't have moderates? You know, there's no one in the middle. Why is there no one in the middle? Because like the middle has the biggest base, right? There are the most people in the middle, but you don't excite people being in the middle. You know?
I would say the middle cares the least. Are they the
also
most
true.
I feel like the middle isn't as active. They're the ones very just like, you know, whatever happens, happens. It doesn't concern me, whatever. It's the either side. There's few on the either side.
That's a really good point.
I saw your video with Gavin Newsom. Well, he showed up in Culver City.
Got kicked out. Well, not kicked out, banned from going in. So basically what happened was I went to, and I've gone to many of his events before, and I just stand outside and I talk to reporters because, you know, he's inside saying, we're going to defeat this Republican recall. And the reporters love it because then they just turn the camera to me and they're like, the leading Democrat's right there. So they love it. So we went into one of his events in San Francisco and I'm just super nice. Like you can't even say I did anything wrong because I just stand there and smile. Like they it's not like they can kick you out because you're not doing anything wrong. So anyway, we've peacefully gone to many of his events. And talk to reporters outside, which they get peeved about because they're like, he's stealing our reporters, you know? Oh, well, that's part of the game. But anyway, so we went to the Culver City one. I signed up. I had a ticket, my mask, I had everything. They wanted masks and negative COVID tests for an outdoor rally. Like, anyway, they wanted all this stuff. I followed all the rules. I show up, and immediately when I get out of the car and I walk up to this line of 30 people, three staff members come up, and they're like, "Oh, sir, we've stopped letting people in." And I look at the gate, and there's like an army of people flowing into the event. They would not say you're not allowed in, because that would be discrimination, because it's illegal to politically discriminate. It's, "Oh, no, we're full. So I go show my card at the gate. Later, like 20 minutes later, they're letting in another group of people. So I tried to go in, and they're like, "Oh, nope, sorry, we're full, close the gate." It's sad. It's so ridiculous.
Kevin, two questions. One, did you show up with cameras, like the YouTube cameras? No.
Nothing. Just me. In fact, I only went with one person, and he was parking the car. So it's literally just me in line, just standing there waiting, and all of a sudden three people come up. Yeah. No cameras, no production, nothing. Yeah.
What would they have said, though, if you showed up early enough, like earlier? It sounds like you arrived towards the tail end of it. I mean, what would their excuse have been had you been waiting in line in the middle of the line?
You know, I'm sure they would have done the same thing. They would have come up with some other excuse. Who knows? You know, we thought like, "Oh, should you go incognito?" And it's like, no, we're not going to lie. We're not going to change my name. We're not going to lie. We're going to go as me. And if they block us, well, shame on them.
Have you been paying attention to much of the odds, Kevin? Cause I saw, I think it was CNBC. I went on today or yesterday, and they had an update on the odds for the election.
Yeah, look, Larry Elder, I think, has been a blessing for Gavin Newsom, because whether Larry Elder is extreme or not, Gavin Newsom is painting him as somebody who stands to the right of Donald Trump, which in California, if you're to the right of Donald Trump, nobody wants you in California. Like, that's just the way California is. Obviously, we know California is super left. But anyway, so whether Larry Elder is or isn't doesn't matter. What's interesting is if you look at the polling, the odds of the recall happening, the odds of Gavin Newsom getting kicked out, look at the odds. The odds were getting very, very high that he was going to get kicked out when the only people running against him were moderates. Caitlyn Jenner, Cox, Kylie, Faulkner, and me. All people with mostly moderate views, like fix homeless, stop having people die on the streets, build more homes. Like, it's not that hard. Like, bring some common sense, right? As soon as Larry Elder got in and they branded him as the anti-vax campaign, the Trump campaign of California, the Trump 2024 takeover of California, as soon as they did that, the odds of the recall happening dramatically shifted against them actually happening. So Larry Elder has been a blessing to Newsom.
Is there anything more you feel like you guys can do, or is it pretty much too late now? Is it just going to be?
No, I mean, it's every day. It's every day. It's you still campaign, you push, it's interviews, it's advertising, videos, whatever. I will say, and this is back to what Andre was saying, every time I do a video about the election on my channel, I lose subscribers on those videos.
Wow.
It's crazy. And it's not because people disagree with what I'm saying. It's just because they click on it and then it's like, "This isn't about stocks or real estate or crypto. See ya." You know, it's like, right. And in fairness, like, not everybody who watches my channel cares about California. So,
and financially, how much do you think you've spent so far on the campaign? Do you have like a running tally?
Yeah, it's somewhere around the treasurer updates this like every quarter. So we're probably all like with my contributions in our dish, we're probably somewhere like 700-800K, and about half of that donations.
Wow. Okay. What would you say is the biggest net benefit of having done what you've done with this whole election?
Well, obviously, hope I win. If I don't win now, then hopefully it's a slingshot for future elections. I think that helps because we want that moderate for California. But personally, it's been very eye-opening. I almost think, and we were just having a conversation about this, it's almost fascinating to think about how much potentially the media in our country, and this sounds tinfoil hat-ish, but it's just kind of how my perspective has changed, though. It's almost shocking how potentially the media actually controls politics in our country. Just think about it. Trump got all this coverage in 2016. And again, he did that 49 thing, like piss off 49% of people, but get like 51% loyalists, right? And because of these crazy things that he could say, lock her up or this, that, or whatever, that always got attention. all his controversies and all that attention, that just like broils up the base, right? You're a moderate, like, oh yeah, we're gonna streamline government and reduce taxes. Fox, Tucker Carlson don't give a crap about that. Anderson Cooper don't give a crap about that. They want scandal, fireworks. And because of that, because the media covers that, because it's kind of clickbaitish, right? It gets views. We end up with more extreme politicians in our country, more extreme and polarizing views.
Well, you have to think, too, not only are they getting views, they're making more money. And at the end of the day, advertisers are the ones paying for it. So really, it all boils down to which topics are going to get the most clicks for advertisers.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, in some sense, it's just like YouTube. Look, if I do a video about... You know, I don't know. What's a generic video? Oh, I know. How to buy real estate in your 401k. Okay. That's going to get like 500 views on my channel. It'll be very useful, but it's going to get so few views. Right. Whereas, oh my gosh, what Kathy Wood just said, the much more interesting to people. I think it's similar for Fox and CNN. Do they want somebody going, well, here's a common sense thing. And people are like, wow, that was commonsensical, right? Versus the emotion you get out of Donald Trump saying he grabbed her by the, you know, whatever, something like that. So, oh my gosh. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. What gets people talking more?
So how do we apply those techniques to this podcast?
No, but look, that's the thing is in some sense, you have to almost sort of pick like, what kind of YouTube channel do you want to be versus even the same thing? What kind of candidate do you want to be? Do you want to be that polarizing extreme screamer? It's kind of like there are those YouTube channels that are like, there's always a crash coming. And I'm not just saying this on like the titles, because sometimes, you know, we use those titles. But then in the video, we're like, hey, we're still investing. We're doing this or whatever. But there are these channels that are just throughout the entire video, like fearmonger channels, right? They have taken that point of view. They are the refuge for that loud percentage of viewers who are like, that's right, the great reset's coming, you know? They're providing for that sort of audience. And so that's why I think in politics, you almost have to do that as well. You just have to go extreme and loud. And it's sad because it shouldn't be that way.
So let's say that, you know, this slingshots you to run again. Would you try to be more polarizing this next time?
Possibly. We'd have to figure that out because I actually really like what you said. And I'm going to draw this little picture here because it makes a lot of sense. So I just drew this here. Look at this. So the green is where I think people's views are, right? Sort of most people have moderate views. But along with what Graham says, the people who are the most active campaigners and the voters and the protesters and the loudest, they're on the extreme far left and far right. And these are the fireworks right here that the media pays attention to. Here's your CNN, here's your Fox. And so really you're not getting the representation of the middle in media. And so that's why you end up with polarizing candidates. That's why over here you've got Gavin. And that's why over here you've got Elder. It's just like Biden, Trump, or Hillary, Trump, right? Super polarizing. And then you have people more like, you know, Andrew Yang, right? Who's closer to the middle, gets way less coverage because it's not as polarizing.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think also those connections matter. You know, I think it's really hard to make it without those political connections, the connections with, you know, big donors. I think that's important. I think, you know, it's not impossible to win without that, but it plays a factor. And I'm sure, you know, the Newsom campaign, I would assume, is exponentially more money to spend on advertising than you guys.
100 times.
100?
100 times. If I spend 500 grand, he's got 50 million. And see, the thing is, I can blow $5 million. I could blow 10%, going, no, 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 this is not a Republican recall. Vote for the moderate. We can, you know, obviously dressed up as a better message, right? Yeah. He can blow 50 million going, stop the anti-vax Republican takeover. It's just, it's 10 times more visible because they got all this money, you know? Now they got to get Biden to come out to campaign for him. The guy's basically begging Biden to come campaign for him, which I don't know how much that's actually going to help him after the Afghanistan thing, but whatever.
Right. But what's interesting is you have a platform, right? You have a voice, which is kind of interesting because you can be one of those candidates that says crazy things out there in the public. And on your YouTube channel, be like, by the way, this is what I actually meant. The only the only problem with that, though, is I could see how that platform could very well be taken away if that message is not aligned with perhaps Google's view. If that, so that's a huge risk that you'd be taking.
That's a good point. You know, Google was actually, I was supposed to do a Google sponsorship like 3 months ago. And then it got to like the final thing of like signing contract or whatever. They're like, oh, by the way, you're a candidate. Sorry, we can't do the partnership. And so they bagged it like last minute.
I get that. I get that they don't want to endorse a political candidate.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they donate $7 million to Gavin Newsom. And then a few days later, get a tens of millions of dollar no bid contract from the state of California. No free market competition. It's rigged, man. Like,
this video is not going to
come across. I never want to come across as tinfoil hat because I always have so much faith, like faith in the judicial system or faith that people can vote what they actually want. But the more I've gone through this process, the more I'm like, my gosh, like it's just so much stands in the way of a middle common sense voice. You have to pick an extreme.
Kevin, you know what Californian I would love to see you debate on how to fix California would be Ben Shapiro.
Oh, I'd love that.
That would be amazing. Shapiro, I don't think anybody can beat Ben Shapiro in a debate. I'm just going to be straight up, and I'm not a Republican or anything, but I don't think that man is – I don't think you can beat him. I'll just be honest, like straight up. Like there's no way you can beat Ben Shapiro. I don't know if you guys have seen his videos. He just decimates people. I've never seen him lose a debate ever.
I've seen it, like, yeah. What if they're like, they just agree on everything?
It was Neil deGrasse Tyson who was he's a phenomenal speaker. I think him and Ben, I listened to them chat a while ago. It was fantastic.
Huh. Oh yeah. I love watching that guy, man. I'm sure everybody else does because all those videos, man, they get like millions of views, like, you know, of him, you know, debating with somebody. But that would be fun. I would love to see you and Ben. I feel like you guys wouldn't be a super polarizing debate though, actually, because I feel like he's, although he's on the right, I feel like he's not super over there. And I feel like you're kind of more toward the middle as well. So I think it would be actually a very educational debate, but I don't think it would be crazy or like, oh man, they're really going at it or something like that.
So, yeah, I don't think so either. I think, but you know, see what's crazy is even you do that, and this is just how petty it is, you'll then get the Sacramento Bee and the LA Times or whatever writing articles going, here's Kevin associating with Ben Shapiro, who spreads right-wing conspiracy theories. You know, and it's like, what, you can't have a conversation with somebody because they're part of a different, you know, party? Like, really? We should just echo chamber down? That's the big danger, is the media will talk to you for a half an hour in an interview, and I've done hundreds of these. They'll talk to you for half an hour, and they'll take the crappiest thing you said, and that's your label.
Yeah.
Oh man, throw it out of context. Frustrating.
Yeah. Well, because it's their headline, you know, and then they leave people with a misimpression or what? It's stupid.
Yeah. Well, how about this, guys? Speaking of headlines, we've got to talk about what happened with crypto. So. Who bought the dip? Because I gotta say, I'm really proud of this. I just like every morning, I happen to go and like just check crypto prices. It's a habit. Woke up this morning, kind of did my thing, checked prices, and I saw Bitcoin at 42. And I was like, "What is something happen? Like, did I miss something in the last like week? Like, did I think it was 50 or something?" And I went on Coinbase, and it was dropping, like literally dropping, and it kind of bottomed out, started to go to 53. So I immediately placed an order to buy, and I got locked in at like 43.9-ish, and I bought Ethereum at like 31.50, 32, like give or take. And then I saw Kevin, then I saw you post the live stream having difficulty. And then, of course, like, you know, within like 30 minutes, I see that little banner come across the top. I think it's just like once people realize the price is down, it started getting attention. And then
everybody
rushed in. It was just locked.
I just want to know why you woke up at 8:06.
No, I was doing, I was up to 7. I just do other things and kind of like, you know, pass the time, like BTC price, just to
yeah.
Where it comes out. I'm like, what?
No, that's awesome, man. I just dropped Jack off at school and I got in the car and I look and I'm like, Cardano 212? What? I had like the same reaction. I got an order. I bought Ethereum and a Cardano and Hut 8. I bought all of them during the day. But I ended up buying Ethereum on Robinhood because nothing else would function. Coinbase was down. Everything was down. And then people got mad at me. Like, how could you support Robinhood?
How dare you, Kevin? Hey, Robinhood has the cheapest crypto prices, right? So at least there's that.
There's that. And look, I mean, like, I personally don't care about using Ethereum to go buy crap. The last thing I want to do is encourage me to go buy more crap. Have you seen the junk in this room here? Okay. Like the last thing I need is more reason to spend my assets. So I don't really care. I mean, some people, like you say, pricing's good. You can't transfer it. You have to sell and you have to pay taxes. You want to move it. Whatever. I just want to make money.
So what was the reason? Why did it drop?
My theory is that just people, I think, are looking too into it. It's just, it's the El Salvador, right? That's the El Salvador news. So it's just buy the rumor, sell the news type of thing. I think it was just as simple as that. As soon as that got announced, people were like, cool, sell. Prices dipped, whales sold, people bought back in. That's, I think it's as simple as that was.
Yeah.
I didn't buy anything, but I did transfer $750,000 worth into a different platform from BlockFi, because I was using BlockFi for my interest. I went to Voyager, so I'm excited about that. I'm super excited about that. I did, yeah. It's just I did not know this, but there's something called SEC Rule 611. I was talking to Graham earlier yesterday about this, and this rule apparently is supposed to guarantee that brokers fulfill trades at the best price possible for their clients. So like Robinhood's a broker, whereas Coinbase and Gemini, those are the exchanges. Exchanges are like the direct marketplaces that things are bought and sold. Brokers are the middlemen, like real estate brokers, stock brokers. And the question I had is, why do we need a broker in today's day and age if they're just the middlemen? And they have different benefits like FDIC insurance, right? $250,000 of cash is protected. But there's another benefit that Voyager has that I didn't know about, which was SEC Rule 611, which on different brokers, what brokers do is they partner up with one exchange. So, for example, like Robinhood, which is a broker, might partner up with Citadel, which is a market maker. And that's kind of like their exclusive go-to partner. Well, that creates a relationship for them that isn't necessarily beneficial to us as the customer, because they don't get the best prices on stocks, perhaps because they only have one exclusive partner. What Voyager does is it sources and is connected to multiple exchanges in the crypto space. And so, for example, if you place an order to buy one Bitcoin on Voyager, it could split your order into different marketplaces. So it might say, hey, I'm going to get Jeremy 0.5 Bitcoin on Coinbase. I might get him 0.4 on Gemini and 0.1 somewhere else. And that's kind of Voyager's way of recreating and applying this SEC Rule 611, which obviously doesn't apply to crypto because crypto is not regulated. I don't know if that made any sense. Did that make sense, all of it?
It does. I mean, basically what you're saying is Voyager makes this claim that they will shop around to see if they can get you better pricing on these different exchanges for crypto, which gives them maybe more potential liquidity access, because they, you know, sometimes there are liquidity crises at certain exchanges, especially in crypto, especially with smaller coins when you have less available. So it makes sense. How much, you know, how much more than a sales pitch that is, I'm skeptical. Sorry. I don't know.
That's a great question. So I'm happy that they don't do this manually. They do this through, I guess it's something called SOR, which I totally forget what the acronym stands for, but it's some kind of smart order algorithm trading. So there's an algorithm that does this automatically. So it's not like somebody on their team's like reviewing everything.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. But
you know, what would be interesting is if you could find, like, I wonder if you could go into the financials and find out how much they actually then sent to different companies. You know, how many, like, which exchange did they use, like, one exchange 95% of the time, and then it's kind of like, really,
right? Yeah, those are great points. I don't know. They're not very transparent about stuff like that, but I'd love to know. But I guess the premise is good, so we'll find out if it works. But either way, the interest
what I want to know
really
is what. Why? So you're not buying the coins there, right? Because it's still they charge you an expensive fee. Don't you buy it on Coinbase Pro or whatever, and then transfer?
No, it's a commission-free brokerage.
But the pricing's a ripoff, isn't it? It was like what BlockFi was doing, where they add like $300 or what? I don't know. It was like the spread was insane.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading. I'm reading the comments here on the side, and big complaint is the spread.
They have a big bid ask spread. Either way, I don't buy my crypto on those exchanges. I haven't tried it on Voyager. My main thing that I love about it is that they've locked their rates for a whole year for this whole 2021 at really great rates. So I remember when I deposited in the BlockFi, their rates were in the mid 5% for Bitcoin and Ethereum. And Voyager has no limit to how much you could earn interest on your deposits. You have a minimum deposit of like 0.01 Bitcoin.
Yeah. But here's the thing that I have seen throughout every single savings account out there. I get that it's locked in for the rest of the year. We're in September. Mm-hmm. We really only have a few months left of the year. I bet given like the first, second week of January, they're going to lower those rates down and be competitive with pretty much everybody else.
That could be true. No, that's true. But if I could get an extra, what is it, 3-4 months of 5 or 6%, that's worth it. That's something. That's not nothing. Yeah. I can always transfer back to wherever I want.
Yes.
But, you know, that's easy. Either way, actually, rates shouldn't go down, but that depends on the prices, right? So rates should be consistent with price action. If people are FOMOing into Bitcoin, then interest rates should be high. But assuming January comes and the price crashes, then yeah, our interest rates are going to go down too. Because nobody wants to borrow when prices are down. Everybody wants to borrow when things are exciting, right? This FOMO out there.
Hey, that's a big statement you said there, Andre. I don't think we could just brush past that. You said when January comes and price crashes. What are you talking about? What are you referring to?
No. I just said see, this is CNN taking me out of context. No. I didn't say it's going to crash. I'm just saying if it crashes, then yeah, we're going to have substantially lower interest rates, which is so strange because BlockFi did an article. They released a study where it shows how prices are supposed to be kind of in line with interest rates. And yet, even though Bitcoin has gone up, their rates have stayed flat and have decreased, which doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And it actually does, though. But like, if I had to speculate why that is, it's because BlockFi is getting a lot of regulatory pressure from at least 4 states that I know of. They sent them a cease and desist letter saying that, hey, those customers in those states can't operate. They can't be your customers. So
all right, Andre, I hate to go back on this, but why'd you say January specifically? Is there anything going on in January, or did you just happen to throw that month out? I just got to know.
I mean, usually with crypto, yeah, things cool off, you know, December, January, really, is when things really.
Okay, well, this is where I want to take this. Do you think if there is this assumption that, let's say there's a 70% chance people feel like there could be a big sell-off in December, January of crypto. Do you think it's possible now that more and more people are figuring out, they're figuring, hey, let me maybe get out in September, October, November prior to when things are supposed to go down. Then maybe they don't go down. Then maybe they go up. I'm just thinking like everybody tries to game the system. Thinking.
It's that self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Where it's like, oh, it's going to go down. I'm going to pull out before everybody else does. That could definitely happen, but I just feel like the only difference this time around, and it's always like, but it's different this time. But this time it kind of is different because the cat is out of the bag, and we have so many hedge funds and so many major players are looking to buy that dip. So if that does happen, I could see it happening for just like a small brief like week or two. Yeah, we could dip and then just exploded the upside. I have no idea what's going to happen this time around just because there's so many more people and so much more money now and people are more knowledgeable about it. So I don't know.
Andre, what are your thoughts on Celsius?
Celsius is awesome. That was the other one that I want to that I transferred some money over to that I'm playing with right now. I like Celsius a lot too, but I think they have a cap on the maximum right now.
Well, no, it's not a cap. It's just if you have more than, I think it's more than a Bitcoin, then it's 3% instead of 5%.
Yeah. See, I like my Voyager rates. They're like 5.6%.
But who's to say these aren't all going to go down in a few months?
They can, but you know, it's so easy to move your coins over. It's not that hard to move your coins over to another platform that
I get so anxious every single time I move something for those like 30 minutes it takes. I am.
Yeah. So pro tip, here's how I did it this morning. So I took Corey's phone. I took a picture of my QR code on Voyager through her phone. So like her phone now has a picture of my QR code, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm on my phone, I go to BlockFi and I take a picture of my QR code from my phone to her phone. So it's like, I'm always using QR codes. I don't ever want to type anything in or copy and paste anything. Mm-hmm. Cause that way, if anything does go wrong, I feel like I have some evidence and some proof that like, hey, I did this right. So if anything screwed up, like that's not on me. It's just like a liability thing. So I would do it that way.
Got it. Yeah. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah. But Celsius is awesome.
That El Salvador though caused this drop. I mean, just to go back a little bit, El Salvador did happen today, but what's weird is that news was already out early this morning. Like when the market opened 6:30 or whatever, we already knew like the El Salvador news had already been out for a bit. And we knew this day was coming. What's so weird though, is it was really like kind of right when California's business day started. Almost makes you wonder. It's like what institution woke up at 8 a.m. on you know this morning? Because look at this. So here's just here's Webull, and the timing is crazy. This was the big crash. It was 8:06 to 8:11. That's it. These 5 minutes right here. That was the big disaster. And then we kind of channeled since then for the rest of the day. We've literally just had algorithms dancing within this channel. All day long, just buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell, vacillating there, right? Taking pennies of profits or whatever over thousands of times. But anyway, this drop right here, I just think there was something with liquidation, like maybe a whale came in and sold, and then you had a bunch of liquidations, which we did see liquidations. Why this whale sold or who they sold, I don't even know if it matters. To me, it almost kind of makes me wonder, look at how much institutional control there is to just go hit the sell button, dump a ton of crypto, force liquidations, wait for those liquidations, boom, buy back, all within 5 minutes, and somebody just raked in millions of dollars, you know?
Right.
How much do you think it would take, though? How many billions do you think that you to influence the market to that degree?
Yeah, let's see if we can get volume on that. Like if we go to CoinMarketCap, I think we could probably see the volume and just see like what the spike was at that time.
Because you're right. It does seem like that liquidation caused the market to drop, which caused a lot of these to be called, causing the price to drop further. And that's the leverage that we've seen in the market.
Yeah.
Graham, are you not scared at all that Bitcoin could crash 80% and never recover?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, because right now I'm like, it's like 3.5% of my portfolio. Maybe like it's under 4%. I mean, it would suck, but I am indifferent either way.
Yeah. So you think it's super unrealistic to even like think that could happen?
Yeah. I think at this point, there's so much institutional money involved that I think if we saw a drop like we did today, like you saw, I mean, instantly, people were buying that back up, and it's kind of reached an equilibrium right now. But I don't doubt as it drops, more people will buy in at this point. And even if it does drop 80-90%, so be it.
I will say if there is an 80 or 90%, that's going to scare off a lot of those retail investors that got in this year. That would be a massive drop off. That would scare off a lot of people. So.
Yeah, because I mean, if we're talking about let's just say an 80% drop, are we even back to where Bitcoin was just 18, 24 months ago when it was at 3-day 5K?
In theory, it shouldn't drop below the previous high, which was 20,000. So if it does drop, it should not drop below 20,000.
Check this out. Here's the volume. So you earlier in the day, you were sitting around, like, in the early morning hours, you're sitting around, like, 100 Bitcoin being transacted at a time, which, what is that, like, $5 million or something like that. Okay, big deal. But right here, right before the market opened up, or I'm sorry, after the market was open for, because this was 8 a.m., right? Yeah, so the market was open for an hour and a half or whatever. Right before, you had transactions or volume anywhere, a spike up to about 1,000 coins. The average here is probably 400 or 500. You went over here to sell pressure of 1,800 all of a sudden. So almost triple the average. That's 1 minute. 1 minute, 1,800. Next minute, 1,100. So it's not just the first minute right here, which certainly is a red bar, but it's the next minute, another almost 1,200, another 1,400. So in the span, and then another 1.2, you know, K right here. So in the span of 4 minutes, you had probably, you know, what is that?
6,700.
6,700, where that's 10x the volume you would have probably, 5 to 10x the volume you would have expected of the average prior. All of a sudden, all concentrated at once. So this is why you get this flash crash, and then immediately you almost get that same volume being bought right back up. 725, like this pause, like this, oh crap, 725, and then 1.6, 1.5, and then you kind of go right back to equilibrium volume here, which is like nothing. So really interesting to see how this was probably as simple as a big whale for whatever reason. Dump, liquidations, boom, boring. Rest of the day, it's literally flat, boring.
That's it. So that works out to be about 300 million at 50,000. That's how much it takes.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It looks like leading up to that point, there were, you know, 5-10 million at a time, and then there was a 5 minute span where it's just dump it all.
Yeah, and I mean, think about it, $300 million. Like, you've got hedge funds that have tens of billions of dollars under management. Like, what do you, who knows? Jeremy, don't you know what is micro, what is it, MicroStrategy or whatever? How much do they have? You know, I mean, they're funds that easily have billions of dollars in cryptocurrency. Or look at even, the whole market cap's like $2 trillion.
I don't see MicroStrategy doing that, though. I don't think Michael Saylor would ever sell anything.
No. I'm more just saying, like, if Michael Saylor has this amount of money, think about, like, the GBTC or all the big pension funds or JP Morgan or all these companies that just have the money to trade with, right?
I don't think they can, though. I think that would be...
No. But I think the point is that there are so many institutions out there that have 10 times that just at their disposal. Sir. And we're talking about... Sure. A tenth of what one company has the power to do that. And I mean, we have to consider too, how many private individuals do you think are out there with hundreds of million or even $1 billion of the Bitcoin that just are, you'd have no idea, that are quiet about it. They're stealth wealth. They've been holding on for a while and they're just secretly, you know, just having Bitcoin on the side. I bet that's probably more common than you would think.
I think the real crazy price action will happen once Bitcoin will become compliant, right? And all those hedge funds can start investing and speculating in Bitcoin. That would be crazy. Not to the degree that I think that would allow them to be if Bitcoin was, you know, energy compliant like Elon's trying to make it be.
All right. Wow. Yeah, well, hey, you know, little buy the dip opportunity there. Yeah, but I agree with you, Graham. I don't think the crypto's going anywhere. I think 2022 is going to be a great year for crypto. But yeah, hey, wow. Crazy day.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. El Salvador, with their president, immediately tweeted that he bought the dip. He bought 150 Bitcoin as the dip.
I thought that 150? Wow.
150 Bitcoin is the, yeah.
With personally or the state's money?
Their money, El Salvador's money, okay. Right? Yep. I mean, that would be wild if he personally is like, just bought the dip.
Guy. Just bought the dip, 150 Bitcoin.
Wait, actually, it's both. It's his money, but it was the country's money.
Right. No, my God.
Imagine if El Salvador is now just like trading Bitcoin, like just sold, about to crash any minute now.
I could see that. Countries becoming the whales in the future.
That would be, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Imagine that. They give their own price targets. going to 100K. Seriously, well, you know what? That would cause a lot of their citizens just not to buy anything, because every citizen would be like, my Bitcoin is going to be worth more, so I better not buy that item that I desperately need. It's better to wait a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy that bread today.
I don't need to eat this week. Bitcoin's going to the moon. I'd rather just keep it.
I'd rather just buy Tattooed Chef.
Yeah. Hey, let's not mention legit companies in with these little crypto coins. Okay, let's just stay away from that.
Boomer returns.
Listen, I'm in Arizona. I'm peaceful. I got the golf course behind me with the pool. Okay, I'm trying to be peaceful. I'm hearing you guys debate about these little things, your little tokens, what do you call it? Peter Piper pizza.
Chuck E. Cheese tokens. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're checking Jeremy, these tokens.
How many Voyager tokens do you have?
Yo.
Just under 30,000.
Just under 30,000. So what's interesting is you get, like, I want to say 1.5% extra yield on your deposit. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's the one good thing. Like, if you actually have substantial amounts of Bitcoin, it almost is a no-brainer to just buy 20,000 Voyager and get all that extra interest. Like,
yeah, but 20,000 Voyager is what? $60,000? How many?
Probably 80,000. I mean, I don't know. The price moves around so much. Let's say it's $3. You know, so you're at like, 60,000?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, if it's at $4, you're at 80,000. And then imagine you got 1 million or 2 million Bitcoin or whatever.
I was thinking about doing that. I actually really want to do that. I want to buy the 20,000 and then get up that extra 1.5. And I think, what would that be? 7.1% yield?
Something like that. Yeah. And I mean, if you compare what you get on Bitcoin yield, if you own the Voyager there, like, you're not going to get that anywhere else from what I've seen out there. So that's the bullish case for VGX long term, is basically folks like yourself, Andre, that have substantial amounts in Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, just saying, hey, like, you know, if I'm going to make a bunch of extra interest, why would I not? And then if we're talking about the scenario where it's institutions ever start thinking, like, you imagine the institution that has 50 mil, 100 mil, if they can get interest on that, if it's only 0.5% more, that's crazy money, right? Never mind.
They're either going to bankrupt Voyager, or Voyager is going to give us like 0.5% interest rates.
That could definitely happen. And then there's still a question you get into, where's the money being lent? That's the other question.
If you have all this VGX, why are you not putting at least 100K into Bitcoin? Like, it's a no-brainer for you at this point.
I'm invested what I need to be invested. Let's put it that way. I don't want to hold too many Chuck E. Cheese tokens.
How much do you need in Voyager to get the interest rate boost?
20K.
I think it's 5,000, 10,000, and 20,000 coins, I think, are the three tiers. So 20,000 is the most. So if you have 20,000, that's when you really get the big bump up there. And then you also get interest on your Voyager as well, which I mean, it moves around. I think you get like 7%.
Jeremy,
Kevin seems skeptical. Kevin, what's your thoughts on this?
I think this is boring. Like, who cares? You guys are getting interest on your coins and all this. Like Graham says, it'll be gone next year. Think big. Go YOLO on something. Like go make an investment. Buy some Enphase. Buy some Tesla. Get into the Tattoo Chef real hardcore if you believe it so hard. I don't care about your stupid dividends. Boring.
Oh my gosh.
I love how we all have our own little assets that we're pumping. We're like, no Bitcoin, no TTC, no Tesla.
Enphase.
You're buying more Enphase.
Hippo!
Right now?
Hippo! Hungry hippo!
Are you buying more Enphase, Kevin?
I haven't said this, but one of these days I'm going to drop 7 figures on it, because like I'm just staring at this cash, and out of everything, it's one of my faves right now. Because once the chip shortage starts subsiding, which I think it will in Q1, Q2, 2022, so I think there's going to be some dip opportunity between here and there. They're going to like 2 to 3x the amount of revenue they get, just because they have so much pent up demand. They're saying it in their earnings calls already. Like, we're only doing 2 million right now. We could be doing 6 with the pipeline we have. And all we need is the freaking order to come in. I think the chip shortage is really kind of keeping a boot on the neck of Enphase. And so as an energy, a green transition, high quality competitor to Tesla in the energy space.
That's boring. 3X, that's lame. Jeremy, I'm all about that 10x. Wait, Jeremy, give me the what's the risk with VGX with the token? Because I know you have a bunch. Well, like, what's the bear scenario for it?
The bear scenario is Voyager, the platform, fails. Like, it's not interesting, right? Like, people are like, I don't want to be on Voyager. They all leave Voyager. It's just a bad platform, and they have trouble competing. They can't become more than that. And then people are like, why do I need to own VGX coins? And then the bull thesis around VGX starts to fall apart. And so that would be worst case scenario, I think, would ultimately be. If Voyager is successful long term, more than likely VGX is going to be highly successful.
How is VGX not classified as a security? How are they not regulating that?
What do you mean? Because it's a VGX is a crypto. It used to be what was VGX?
But it kind of reminds me of like shares, like digital shares of their company that they've kind of issued. I mean, it might as well be.
Yeah. So yeah, and I know this is a little different concept, because most cryptos don't actually do anything, and VGX is actually doing something. So it's a little confusing. I can understand that. versus the other ones. But yeah, in terms of it makes sense. It's like, you know, VGX is its own crypto, which you get a rewards program for. And I think this is honestly, if you're talking about actual real world applications, I think this is definitely potential for other companies coming out with more of their own cryptos and things like that over time, and having the rewards programs actually done with cryptos rather than a lot of the traditional ways. So, but I mean, Voyager, there's also Voyager stock you could buy if you want to believe in Voyager long-term as well. It's just, I almost feel like Voyager VGX token has more upside than Voyager stock. Like, let's say Voyager becomes this big thing, like a big brokerage over the next 5-10 years, right? Voyager stock should increase exponentially from here, but I think VGX would increase more rapidly, because I think that would mean more than likely that rewards program in the way cryptos are valued. You look at the way cryptos are valued, just like, you know.
Did you just say that crypto and VGX is going to be more valued than the stock version of VGX?
I think so. If as long as it's a really big success, I think so.
It could happen.
Yeah, I mean, because crypto, you can throw any valuation on it. Stocks, there's like limits, right? And then if you get too high, people are like, oh no, that's way too high. Crypto, it's like, dude, Bitcoin could be at 50 trillion tomorrow and you guys would still be buying it left and right. You know, you don't know any better. So anyway,
at that point, you wouldn't need to buy it. At that point, you don't sell it. You just use it.
No. You guys would still be buying the dip. You're like, it's down to 40 trillion market cap today.
You know, it's worth such a good deal.
Well, considering we'd be billionaires, you might be right.
Oh. Oh. What's worth noting, though, is I think you're hanging a lot of your ambition for Voyager on their ability to attract and retain customers, which they can do while they're promising these higher rates. But as soon as those rates go down, as Graham has alluded to, Andre is going to transfer his money, and so are a ton of other people, right to the next broker who's paying the higher rate, right? So it almost kind of feels like you've got this like crowd looking for yields, and it's just there's no loyalty. It's yield loyalty. And I'm not blaming you at all. Like, do it, Andre, right? It's like, why would you not do it, right? You're voting with your money, as you should. You should go where you're going to make the most. So it's just, you got this army of, okay, now we're going to go to BlockFi. Okay, now we're going to go to Voyager. And then next you're going to go to a different one, whether it's Kraken or Celsius, or there's going to be some new one. And then JP Morgan's going to go, no, come to us. Bundle all of your accounts with us, and we'll give you 4% on your crypto. And then, oh my gosh, JP Morgan's doing it. And then all of a sudden you've got all the JP Morgan Chase credit cards, you know, and then the next place is going to do it. It's right literally away. The same thing that happened with the bank savings accounts. Like, you know, Yada Bank's going to be hot for a period of time. Then it's going to be that bank and that bank and that bank. It's just all like this game of customer acquisition. How many can you retain after you drop rates? And there's your true value.
You're 100% right. And in my personal opinion, Kevin, it's an arms race. And I think the ones that can build out other services and products that make you say, it's too much of a hassle to switch to another brokerage, I think those would be the ones that win. And I'm hoping Voyager can do that. If they can't do that, then my investment will not be a huge payer. It can still be successful, but it just won't be a huge payer, right? Because it's an arms race. We're watching it across the big banks. They're all trying to get into everything. Like, everybody wants to be in everything. Everybody wants to be a crypto brokerage, stock brokerage, savings account, debit card, credit cards. It seems like every single person is in this industry is trying to get there. And it's an arms race. You're 100% right. There'll be consolidation. I think we talked about that a little bit last week. I wouldn't be surprised if Voyager ends up getting bought out maybe at some point from like a Coinbase or somebody like that, right? That's much bigger and could pick them up.
I don't know. I feel like they, at that point, they would just beat them with rates. They just drive them out of business.
You know, and Graham, no, this happens in all types of industries. A lot of times it's way more costly to try to put somebody out of business. And remember, when you're the bigger company, you go out of business faster than the little company in a lot of these situations. So for instance, Lyft and Uber, this is a really good example for anybody who wants to learn something here today. Uber and Lyft, they had a phenomenal battle. And what was interesting is Lyft would undercut Uber essentially when it came to prices. Now you might think, Lyft would get hurt more in this situation. No, because Uber was doing way more volume. That Lyft was like, you know, if you're wondering why Uber used to lose a fortune, it's because Lyft was undercutting them, taking market share, coming up in the game. And then Uber would, if Uber tried to compete everywhere that Lyft was trying to compete, they would have gone out of business because they had way more volume. So if they're losing $1 or $2 or $3 per ride, right? And Uber's doing far more rides than Lyft, that puts Uber in a really bad scenario, right? So I'm just saying, like, sometimes, a lot of times it makes sense just to acquire a company and just say, you know what, but we'll buy you out.
I mean, just to counter that, in this analogy of Uber being such this larger company or whatever, it would also stand within reason to believe that Uber could raise capital faster than a smaller company could that would have more risk at a more attractive interest rate, allowing them to compete longer. So maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. And sometimes that's the case where the bigger guy will, but a lot of times what I found is a lot of times who might be supporting Lyft is also who's supporting Uber. So you get into these weird scenarios where the VCs are in these same circles and sometimes the same investor in both companies, and it gets weird. And then it's like, okay, what do you do here? And so now Lyft and Uber have pretty much given up their market share battle to, for folks out there. Now what you're seeing is rides are getting exponentially more expensive than they used to be for various reasons, but also those companies don't care about market share. Uber has their market share, Lyft has their market share. Now they're like, let's start making some dang money. So, you know, once you kind of have established yourself, then the profits can come in a major way, right? So,
Profits.
You mean Tesla with RoboTax?
Last week, I don't remember if I mentioned it last week, but a friend of mine's just sold one of these NFTs for 600 Ethereum. I just sent it to you, Kevin. So if you want to show that.
600 Ethereum. Jeez.
$2.4 million. It's an NFT. NFT that the Bored Ape Yacht Club, which I actually don't know anything about, but it's crazy.
What, and sorry, you said they sold it for 600 and would they make it or what?
Do you see it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Did they like draw it or what's so special about it?
That's a great question. I feel like this is the next rich person flex. It's just like, hey, what do you have? I have this picture of a golden ape for 2.4.
Layout for you.
Bored Ape Yacht Club.
That's right.
NFT sells for record 2.25. And this is a friend of yours.
At Sotheby's. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty big that Sotheby's is doing this.
Yes.
Well, I mean, think about it. You got to attract millennials. No millennial gives a crap about Sotheby's or did a year ago. Right. Like, do a survey on Instagram or TikTok. Do you know about Sotheby's a year ago? And sure. I bet you 99% of people under 25 are like, who? Or like, maybe you'd get the real estate brokerage. Who's going to say the auction house who's under 25, right? Now they're in NFTs. Smart. Now you're finally hip with the young people.
Right. Smart. Yeah, scroll down. What does it have? Yeah, it's insane. Look at that.
That's it.
That's all it is. Yeah, I don't know what
it's
other
JPEG. Parts are. He got ripped off. It's just a JPEG.
Oh, he sold it. He didn't buy it. He sold it.
I'm gonna. How do I save this? Save. Oh, wait, I know.
Let's screenshot it.
There we go. There we go. Boom.
See, here's what
that's
I don't
like know. The equivalent of me drawing a Mona Lisa on a napkin and being like, "Yo, check this out. I got her right here. It's framed."
But here's what I like partially don't get is that people are making these or like their profile pictures and stuff like that. How is that any different from Kevin taking a screenshot and making that his profile picture? I mean, yeah,
I'm doing it right now.
He's not the.
How is that any different than saying like the Pokemon cards we have can't just be printed on a printer and displayed? Like it's the same thing.
Yeah, but as a profile picture, you're not going to click a profile picture and that's going to take you to your like ETH address.
Yeah, but these NFTs, they have like a QR code you could scan and just.
I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are ways to authenticate them, so.
Who cares?
Buy more Tesla. Who cares?
I haven't bought Tesla in such a long time. I feel so bad about that.
Yeah, it's because it's not an all-time high, Kevin. Don't worry. When it'll hit an all-time high, you'll be going all in. Just like Tattoo Chef when it hits 29.
It'll break the 24
barrier. Jelly. I made so much money going up and down with TTCF and selling at the peaks.
Kevin, what do you think about Elon Musk today saying that it could be worth $3,000 a share?
There we go. Elon Musk said what?
That it could be worth $3,000 a share. That's why it went up so much today.
Tesla, he said that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by what
year?
That's
why immediately it opened, it jumped up like 3%.
Oh, yeah, I had no idea he said. There we go. I just wanted to change the exposure there on my eighth there.
How much, Kevin, how much was that?
Kevin. You know, this right here was about 30 seconds of effort.
I wish I had a printer right here that I could print a stock of like Tesla and be like, look, I have a share of Tesla. Look at me.
Oh, but yeah, you know, hey, you know, that's 2.25 million right there. So I don't know if you could say that with the share of Tesla yet. You know, maybe one day. So that's interesting. I didn't know that about the 3,000. I mean, I'd be curious. The big piece of the puzzle there is when, what the date was. You know, if he's like, I think it'd be worth $3,000 a share in 2 years versus in 20 years. That's obviously a big difference.
Sure.
I'll find out.
Somebody brought up a good point that the reason that people really get into NFTs, besides that they're highly speculative and they make a lot of money, is that it's a kind of a bulletproof way of buying more crypto without going through fiat. So, you know, if you don't want to have the IRS kind of track your every move, and if you want to buy more crypto, a good way of doing that is, you know, trading NFTs for more crypto. So without having to deposit. Yeah.
Oh, so Elon said He told employees that he agrees with ARK Invest that Tesla's worth $3,000 a share if they execute really well. In other words, if the employees execute really well. So he was using it as like motivation to the employees who get partially paid in Tesla stock, right? Like, right. Hey, this is worth $3,000 a share by 2025. We just have to get off our butts. Kind of interesting. A little salesy, more so than I think fundamentally driven, right? That this is hype, right? It's like, yeah. Huddle up, everyone. We're all going to win the Super Bowl. We're worth it. We're worth the trophy. You know, I don't think it's anything more than that, but okay, that's interesting. But anyway, Andre, I have no idea what you're saying. I don't understand what this means. Like, you could buy more crypto without the fee. I don't get that.
Okay, you buy an NFT, it appreciates in value, you sell it for more crypto. Boom.
Okay, so you're just saying, but I mean, like, I could also buy crypto and have crypto appreciation.
Yeah, through fiat, if you want to pay more taxes and if you want records of it.
Why through fiat?
Because you have to deposit fiat to buy crypto.
Okay, but if I deposit fiat to buy the NFT, right?
No, you could buy it with crypto.
So, okay, so what you're saying is, if I already have $100,000 in Bitcoin right now,
correct?
I could use that to go speculate on an artwork or whatever, or piece of art or whatever. And you think there are tax benefits to speculating on like, okay, a collectible or what?
Let's just say that I bought $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. It appreciates to $500,000, right? Now I have an excess of $400,000, which I could use to buy this Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT. So this NFT triples in value to $2 million. I could then go back to Bitcoin and I've tripled, quadrupled my position without going through fiat.
Yeah, but you should still pay taxes when you
raise. Right. I agree with you. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying
you're just saying you don't right now.
What?
Are you saying you don't have to pay taxes right now?
No. I'm just saying that for people that use this as a vehicle to increase their fiat position, they do that without going through the fiat route, which for them might make sense. I'm not saying that.
How would that be any different from changing Bitcoin to Cardano? Cardano triples, you put it back to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I just think NFTs have a higher, I guess, a speculative outcome. You could make more money with them if you know how to get into them.
I see. Okay. More volatile. So you're saying, I mean, the risk reward profile is much larger in the NFTs where, hey,
correct.
More risk. You can.
I'm not saying you should do this. I'm not saying I'm doing this. I'm just saying for a lot of people that makes sense if they're dealing with millions of dollars that they don't want to maybe pay taxes on or go through fiat.
Hmm.
But they would still pay. Wouldn't they still pay tax if they move Bitcoin, let's say, to Ethereum, or Ethereum to a NFT back to Ethereum? Wouldn't that?
No, because a lot of these NFT platforms, they're just DeFi platforms. They're not connected through the traditional exchanges.
Hmm. So what you're saying is, if I have 1,000 Ethereum. And it just appreciated to where if I sold it, I'd have to pay, I don't know, millions of dollars in taxes or whatever. I could just take my Ethereum, buy an NFT that's worth, I don't know, whatever, X Ethereum. Is my ownership still denominated in ETH then? Or did I technically liquidate the Ethereum to buy it? Because as soon as you liquidate, you should
pay taxes. I'll put it in really simple terms, money laundering. Does that make more sense?
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
See,
I'm not saying you should do this, but people do this, yes.
I can definitely see the allure of NFTs, especially to a lot of folks that have been in crypto for a while. Because you think about it from that context. Like, imagine you're somebody that, you know, for the past decade, five or 10 years, right? You've been investing in cryptos, Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, right? You've been making a ton of money with those, right? Those were seen as pretty much the riskiest assets you could pretty much be in, right? Now all of a sudden these NFTs start coming out and now that's the new riskiest asset. And so if you're somebody like that, you're looking at this and you're like, I want to be in the next biggest possibility, which is these NFTs, right? And so you're like, let me swap out some Ethereum or some Bitcoin or whatever and go ahead and buy these NFTs. And so I see the allure from that group of individuals that have made a lot in crypto and are looking for the next riskiest thing because this is like another level up of risk, right?
Hmm.
Where, so from that standpoint, I can understand it.
Yeah, people gravitate towards volatility.
Hey, you want to hear about another scam? I mean, do you want to hear about a scam?
Please.
Sorry, Andre.
I don't understand why you're talking to me as though I'm doing this. I'm just trying
to explain how
this stuff works. You guys are amateurs, and I'm trying to explain it to Grandpa and Grandpa.
Okay.
You guys are pinning it on me like, Andre, what's your next strategy? This is not anything I do. I'm just explaining to you guys how this stuff works sometimes.
Okay, let me remove your name.
Thank you.
Correct the record there.
You boomers.
Be nice to the governor. Be nice.
I got $2.25 million right here.
For free.
Oh, okay. So listen to this. So I buy this house. I'm in escrow on this place. We talked about this last week. As fixer upper. And one of the reasons I'm buying it is because, like, it looks like crap, but it's got a new air conditioning and a new roof. And it's got new ductwork and dual-paned windows and all this stuff. And so I'm like, great. It looks like crap. It's got all these upgrades. That's like the definition of getting a good deal in real estate, right? Well, I get the title report today because we're supposed to close soon. I open up the title report. And in the title report, I'm like, what the heck is this? $89,000 slapped on to the property taxes owed for the property for financed improvements, including a $29,000 air conditioner. I kid you not, $29,000 for an air conditioner and $28,000 for a roof. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you spend that much money on this small property? And basically, this lady, just the seller, overpaid dramatically for these improvements that are supposed to be energy upgrades. She's told she doesn't have to make any payments on these because it'll be incorporated in her property taxes and that she's not getting a loan. Her house is getting a loan. Now she gets a bill for like another $800 a month or whatever. Now she's selling the house and they sold the house to me with new AC, roof, all this stuff advertised, right? I get the title report. I go, wait, you want me to take over all the payments? That's like charging me once for the upgrade to buy the house and then charging me again by making me make your payments for the crap you bought.
Wait, Kevin, this is the deal that you talked about getting your offer accepted as a wedge deal. This is like a week or two ago, right? Yeah. Yep. I wondered about that. I remember saying like, wait a second, how are you able to get this deal?
No. I mean, like, you get deals like this, all like good deals all the time. This one just happened to have a shady title report. So we'll see. We're telling them, look, we ain't buying it unless you pay off that $89,000 or whatever in loans. It's not my job to take over your debt. You pay off your debt, your home equity line of credit, your judgment because you got sued and lost, and you pay off your other debts because it ain't my responsibility, and I certainly ain't gonna pay it. So if they pay all that stuff off, hey, good for me. Then you know, we're back to the good deal we thought we had.
It'll take like three lifetimes to break even on those air conditioners.
It's so insane. They sell it as like, oh, well, you're going to get an energy efficient furnace or an air conditioner. You're so right. It's like the break even is like you said, a lifetime. It's so dumb, man. It's
Kevin, and here's a point you're not even thinking about when it comes to like how dumb this is, right? Hold on. Wait, what? Anybody talking?
It cut there for a second.
I don't know. It cut out for a second there. I'm sorry. So anyways, here's why it's so dumb. Because you think about it, right? Spend all that money on air conditioners. Why not buy NFTs of air conditioners? They go up exponentially in value. And an NFT of the house, and you like make $1 billion.
Jeremy, so cool. What's even better is that you can spend $1.2 million buying an NFT rock.
A pet rock.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's the one Andre was saying he's going all in on. He thinks it's a super good investment that every single person watching.
No, I'm going all in on TTF. I'm floating around 16 to 24 forever.
Oh, man. No, so that's a crazy story, though, Kevin. That's ridiculous, man. What are you going to do about that as governor of California?
Well, honestly, the whole PACE program, which is what this is done under, it's supposed to be, oh, let people spend money on more energy efficient stuff. It's a complete ripoff. It's literally a toxic ripoff. I made a video about this 4 years ago, and a bunch of PACE contractors were trolling me, calling me a fraud for exposing their fraud. Like, let me give you an example, okay? I sold a house 3-4 years ago for a client, and they're like, Kevin, we have to let you know we do have a PACE loan. And I'm like, oh, what's it for? Let's figure this out. And they're like, we painted the exterior of the home. So it's like a 3,000 square foot home. They painted the exterior of it. I go, oh, okay. I mean, like, I'll paint the exterior of this home. It's going to be like $6,000. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Like, no big deal. This is a $700,000 house. What's $6,000? They're like, no, Kevin, we paid $36,000. And I'm like, well, you what? Well, you paid $36,000 for a paint job of the exterior of a $700,000 house? What? And they're like, well, Kevin, it's UV rated paint.
I had that painted. I bought one of my duplexes, the one that you and I did that thing at, that day event there. And yeah, I think they paid like $10,000 to paint that with the that special paint. Like $10,000.
You know what I think it is?
The seller.
The seller did.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, what? I took it over. It's good. Look, if you get it, like, and you didn't pay for it, you're getting that paint job for pennies on the dollar. You're paying like 30 cents on the dollar for what they paid. You know, the value of a new paint job outside is going to bump your value, you know, depending on how bad it was before, you know, versus that $10,000, what, maybe $3,000-$4,000 or whatever. Depends how bad it was. But this UV stuff, what, I mean, look, if you could get it for free, basically, which I think you did, that's great. But
hey, maybe it comes with a QR code that you could scan as an NFT.
Hey, I got a quick practical question for Graham and Kevin here. Do you feel like, you know, let's say interior paint, 15, 20 years old, exterior paint, 15, 20 years old, is one of the best investments you could make if you're about to sell your house, painting the house exterior and interior, or is that not really up there?
It is. Oh my gosh. A fresh paint job on the exterior and interior means a lot. It makes the place seem new. I mean, you could have the crappiest spot, but if it's got like fresh paint, it smells new. You walk in, it's like, wow. It has that excitement to it.
The new house smell.
Yeah.
I think every place should at least have some form of a paint job inside before you sell it. Paint and carpet. That's where all the money is inside. This extra UV paint, that's garbage. You know, that's bull crap. But look, you know, in Graham's duplex case, like spend the $3,000 or $4,000. It's worth it. Do the inside paint. Absolutely. Paint and carpet.
And glazing.
Yes, glaze everything.
Glaze everything. You
know, that's super interesting. That's super practical because I think a lot of people think like, oh, maybe I'll redo this bathroom. It's kind of outdated, or let me change the countertop in the kitchen or new sink. And I think that's when most people think, when really a lot of times just throw some nice paint up on the interior, exterior, and that could get you, you know, a much better presentation. That's interesting. Hey, here's an interesting question I would love for us all to answer. What is the riskiest investment we hold? That would be intriguing. You can only name one. What is the riskiest possible thing you hold? And then what is the thing that you think has the biggest upside potential over the next 10 years? I think people would be really intrigued to hear this subject. Graham, why don't you start us off?
Oh gosh, the riskiest right now? Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, I'm probably on topic, but I would say NFTs.
That would Yeah, it's got to be something you personally own.
Oh,
yeah. What's the risk of NFTs you own? You own NFTs, Greg?
I don't know. I mean, there's a few speculative stocks. Fisker was one of them. I think I had like 30 or 40,000 of Fisker. That's something. Listen, I could totally see Fisker 5 years from now being a $2 stock or a $70 stock. I have no clue. So I would say Fisker for me.
I feel like for Graham, wouldn't it be the car technically? I feel like that's pretty risky though. What if you get into an accident or?
It's insured. It's insured for a stated value. So the car like that, we have agreed upon price ahead of time. It's insured for that amount. If it's something happens to it, I get that amount.
That's fair.
I'm not worried about it.
Who's next?
Kevin, what about you? Riskiest thing you own, and then what has the biggest upside potential over the next 5-10 years in your opinion of something you own?
Well, they're both the same answer. Ooh. Which in some sense makes sense, right? Risk reward. Tesla call options. The Tesla Leaps I bought when they were $715, and you know, Tesla's like $760 or whatever now. And quite a few of us, 6 out of 8 of my Tesla options that I have, because I have a whole like ladder of them, 6 out of 8 of them are upside down. You know, I've only had them for what, September, 5 months, but just the theta decay and the implied volatility crush has just destroyed these options. Now, this could change in a heartbeat. And that's the crazy thing about options. We could have this skyrocketing of Tesla over the next 2 months, and it's $1,000, let's just say, you know, blowout delivery numbers or whatever, and it's $1,000 in a matter of a few weeks or a couple months. These options could be the biggest 10D printers ever. So you know, it's but they're the ones that are, in my opinion, the riskiest. They are also the ones that could make the most money, and they are also the ones that could be the most stress.
Andre, what about you?
Riskiest investment, my YouTube channel.
No,
I would say publicly what people probably think is my riskiest investment is probably my Pokemon cards that I recently bought. People probably assume that is a very risky one. I think 3 to 5 years from now, it'll easily double in value because I think it was significantly undervalued from what I bought at. And I didn't really tell people the price I bought at, but it's lower than people think. And publicly, like actually personally, what I think is actually my most riskiest, what I would say is OMI, the crypto. I'm down substantially on it. I still have it. Graham pulled out on time. I still have mine.
I bought it and sold within hours. I bought into it and I realized, like, what am I doing? This is a mistake.
You sold because you saw, which I did not see this, sold a sketchy character talk about it. Which I didn't know. I didn't know who this guy was. I didn't know that he was sketchy. If I had seen that, I would have pulled out too. But that doesn't mean that OMI's sketchy in general. I think they're doing good things, and I think there is potential, but I think it's extremely risky, and I wouldn't suggest anybody.
It was part of so many just groups that I
I did not know that.
Jumped right out and put it all in Bitcoin and made it all back. So
Well, so as far as biggest potential, I think Ethereum or Bitcoin.
Wow. Yeah, that's I would expect like some fringe like crypto. You said has the biggest upside, because I mean, you know, Bitcoin's already up so big. But no, that's interesting. OK,
no, I mean, like sensible investments. I don't mean like YOLO bets. I mean, like sensible where you're not going to lose your shirt.
Because
just to answer you, sorry, to clarify, there's probably a 10 that we could rattle off the top of our heads that have more potential, but I would never suggest that to people because I think it's way too risky.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, my riskiest would probably be either VGX or Voyager. Either not one tattooed? Because no, definitely not tattooed. But tattooed also isn't my biggest reward potential either, in my opinion. I actually think the biggest reward stock I probably have is actually the planet, believe it or not. Yeah, I think that one is definitely up there with the biggest potential. So, but yeah, that would be mine. So, Graham, you wanna take us home?
Love to. So, guys, really quick before we leave, there is the Millennial Money Clips channel down below in the description. Go ahead and check it out. We're posting the best highlights right there. So, just go ahead, do that really quick, and also make sure to subscribe because half the people watching, so statistically, half of you are not subscribed. It's totally free to do. Just hit the little button. We only go live once a week. Then you'll be kept up to date on all of that. And then also hit the like button. Just got to do that. Thank you guys so much for doing that. Really appreciate it. And until next week.
And I'm going to keep this NFT here until somebody notices.
You're a multi-millionaire. There you go.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.